If you're looking for a Christmas gift for a child, grandchild, or godchild ages 2 through 7, purchase the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December, Angel, Angel, What Do You See? Follow Mary and Joseph, the donkey, the innkeeper, and the shepherds to discover that this special baby is the Savior, born for you and me. Learn more about Angel, Angel, What Do You See? By calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or at issuesetc.org. Angel, Angel, What Do You See?
We're liberal in the sense that the liberal arts schools are liberal. We're an urban newspaper. We write about evolution as a fact. We don't give equal time to creationism. We are liberal in the sense that we are open-minded, sort of tolerant, urban. Our weddings page includes, and did even before New York had a gay marriage law, included gay unions. So we're liberal in that sense of the word, I guess.
So I'll ask you directly, and you can answer directly, does the New York Times have bias in favor of Democrats or liberals?
Aside from the liberal values, sort of social values thing that I talked about, no, I don't think it does.
As former New York Times editor Bill Keller speaking at the Lyndon Baines Johnson Library and Museum in 2011, articulating how it is the New York Times is liberal, where its tolerance extends, the limits of its tolerance. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking a little bit about what we've talked about a lot here on Issues Etc. We've talked about media coverage of LGBTQ controversies at Christian colleges. And there's another story. This one at a Quaker college. You know the Quakers. They're pretty traditional in their beliefs about marriage. But at a Quaker college, one of the students came out during a lip sync contest singing a Taylor Swift song, and the big reveal was he was gay. He got two standing ovations. The video went viral. Taylor Swift even reposted it and had something to say on Twitter, and then the news got to it. How did they cover this story? Very common story. Was their coverage as typical as it usually is? Terry Mattingly will be our guest. Glenn Stanton joins us after that. We'll talk about a column in The Atlantic about gender reveal parties. This is where they cut the cake. They see if it's pink or blue. Everyone is happy. The Atlantic isn't happy about gender reveal parties. They actually say they kill people. Pastor Paul McCain joins us in Hour 2 of Issues Etc. for our series on the Lutheran Confessions today. The Augsburg Confession on Confession and the Mass. Joining us to discuss media coverage of an LGBTQ controversy at a Quaker university, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
So we've talked about these kinds of stories many times. It's a very common story. Some sort of group, or in this case, a lip sync contest where someone comes out as gay on a conservative Christian college campus. Is there anything different in the Quaker story?
This really is turning into Yogi Berra's It's Deja Vu all over again, isn't it? I mean, we have covered this so often at Get Religion, and frankly, most of these controversies are occurring in a Catholic context. This one was particularly interesting because the Quakers have quite a bit of theological diversity within their Protestant structures. I think what makes this one different is the story included some pretty clear evidence of divisions inside the faculty of the school, and that raises a really important issue because a school is essentially its trustees and its faculty. That's really who defines who a school is. But the story was pretty ordinary in that it was completely through the viewpoint of one side. If anyone was going to defend the college, George Fox University, it was going to be the paid PR spokesperson for George Fox. At one point, there's really some crucial information about the divisions within the Quakers. And they need to kind of give you some information about the Northwest Yearly Meeting of Friends, which it turns out is an evangelical group of schools, and they are people who would tend to favor George Fox. And what's interesting is that we don't hear from anyone in that group. We hear someone from a competing group summarize what it is that the conservatives believe. Even when one of the only chances to talk about doctrine, something that hardly ever happens in these stories, we even get that from the viewpoint of the other. So, yeah, this was kind of the same thing. But here's the key point of it all, the point we make over and over at Get Religion. These schools have doctrinal statements. When you come to these schools either to be a student, a staff member, or a faculty member, certainly in the first case and the third case, students and faculty, 99 times out of 100, and the exceptions are usually Baptists who don't like to write doctrine down on paper, 99 times out of 100, you have signed a document that says that you understand that these are the confessions, these are the doctrines, these are the platform beliefs at the foundation of the school. And usually at conservative schools, there will be a statement in there about affirming traditional Christian views on sex and marriage. And these days, schools have had to spell that out, you know, in terms of sexual activity outside of marriage. And they will define marriage as defined for centuries by Christians and most other religious groups as between being a man and a woman. This story, once again, talks over and over about the college having rules. It has rules. It has rules. There never is any mention of a doctrinal covenant that people voluntarily sign. And this gets us to the crucial journalism point and also the religious liberty First Amendment point in this story, which is religious schools have a right to set the borders of their voluntary association. I mean, this brings us to the Hosanna Tabor Lutheran case in 2012 at the U.S. Supreme Court that said that Christian institutions that are defined by doctrine can hire and fire people based on those doctrines. So this is, it's really important. In fact, in my post at Get Religion, I stress that this is just as important to the left. Not only are there liberal schools that have doctrinal covenant, if George Fox doesn't have a written doctrinal statement and doesn't have something that a student or a faculty member is clearly presented with a chance to sign it or not sign it as a matter of conscience, if that document doesn't exist, that's an argument in favor of the left. That means that George Fox really hasn't been open about what it believes, and there may be gay, lesbian, and trans students on this campus who went there not knowing what the school believes. Same thing would be true of faculty. So what we have here is a story that's got holes in it that we're very familiar with, this covenant thing, more than anything else. But the new one here, what I really think listeners would be interested in, especially people who are interested in Lutheran education and other forms of Christian higher education in America, is the degree that the story does admit that the faculty of this school is divided. And that's an important point, and that's something worth following up with more coverage.
Okay, see, I can explain the kind of lopsided coverage in terms of the Kellerism that you talked about there. You know, this, of course, we're tolerant. Of course, we get both sides, but some issues have only one side, to summarize what he had to say there. But when you report simultaneously that the faculty is divided, but fail to report whether or not that those faculty have had to sign any kind of a covenant or statement for their employment, that seems kind of malfeasant in terms of journalism.
Well, you can't understand the situation. You can't understand what's going on if you don't know those facts. You end up with kind of nebulous, cloudy language about the school being more welcoming or something like that. But folks, at some point you have to handle the legal facts on the ground, which is people have either signed these covenants or not, and the covenants clearly mean something in the eyes of the U.S. Supreme Court. And that's important. I mean, but the Kellerism, a term that was created by a friend of Get Religion years ago, the scholar Paul Marshall, the Kellerism thing basically means the journalist writing the story has already decided which side of the debate is correct. And thus, you don't even need to talk to anyone on the conservative side. You can just quote an email from one of them and then take maybe another sentence or two off an online website. But you actually do your personal contact, your interviews, the places where you get stories and details and emotion. You do all of that with only one side, because there's only one side of the story that's worth hearing. And that's what's so crucial in that familiar at Get Religion, that familiar quote from Bill Keller, which is, aside from the kind of social and cultural liberalism, no, I don't think we're liberal. Well, Todd, as you and I have said before, and it seems like we are kind of doing the deja vu all over again thing, what are the issues that have most divided Americans over the last 25 to 30 years? There are wars and there are budget debates, but it seems that we can't fight about anything in this country without social, cultural issues getting into the political mix. And frankly, as someone who's in his mid-60s and has seen a thing or two, I link a lot of that to Roe v. Wade, and I link a lot of that to battles over education in America. And as journalists, the key here is that we should care deeply about whether the public has a chance to see the views of people on both sides of these stories presented with some degree of respect, and certainly with a sense of accuracy, and as you just said, completeness in terms of the facts on the ground.
Tell me how it works from the journalist's perspective. They go on to George Fox University's campus in the aftermath of the video going viral and then Taylor Swift's sharing of the video. And they start stopping students in the quad, saying, were you there? What did you think? How do you go about finding from a grassroots, the grass of the quad, a student who says, I came here because I was a Quaker. I came here because it's a Christian university. I don't know if that really jibes with my beliefs.
Well, first of all, I don't know in this age of thin, wiped out travel budgets and stuff, I don't know if anyone did visit the campus. Most reporting today in this age of red ink in the field of journalism and low budgets, most of this occurs by telephone and through social media. In this case, though, I would assume that it would be pretty easy to search for traditional religious campus ministries at George Fox. I mean, there's going to be a variety of different student groups, and I would imagine that by their names, it's pretty easy to figure out who's who. In this case, it's obvious. Not only have they talked or exchanged emails and other social media contacts with current people who back this student's case and back his point of view and the symbolic action he took, they've got alumni and they've got people who were in the gay rights advocacy group on campus in the past. They have other people here that clearly shows that quite a bit of reporting has been done to get that side. I want to stress again, that's crucial and valid work. The question is, where are the voices of people on the other side? Where are the students? I'm assuming there's a parents group that supports this university, probably has a website. I can't imagine that only people on the doctrinal left have been discussing this online. It's pretty easy these days to be able to figure out who the players are on the other side of the debate.
We're talking about media coverage of an LGBTQ controversy at a Quaker university. Terry Mattingly is our guest. When we come back, we'll find out what this story may have to do with the famous TMAT trio. Stay tuned. Please include the worldwide outreach of issues, etc. in your year-end giving. With 3 weeks left in 2019, we're $110,000 short of expenses. You can make a secure online gift at issuesetc.org. You can also make a year-end tax-deductible donation by check. Make your check payable to Issues, etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening, and thanks for keeping us in mind at the end of the year.
The Simply Classical curriculum for special needs moves at my child's pace and gives her exactly what she needs. So writes Amber, a homeschooling mother who has joined thousands in homes and schools teaching from this uniquely Christian classical approach to special education. Teach students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome based on ability level rather than chronological age. Use promo code LPR20 today at classicalspecialneeds.com. Classicalspecialneeds.com.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Ed Crusum offers Bible-based, Christ-focused Christmas ornaments in various sizes for church and home. Use our Jesse Tree collection to teach your children this Advent and see our new premium ornaments, a crucifixion tableau, angel and shepherds, the Holy Family, Epiphany, and much more. Visit adcrusum.com for unique and theologically sound greeting cards, jewelry, gifts, churchwares, banners, certificates, and housewares. That's adcrusum.com.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Advent season at lutheranpublicradio.org. Sacred music for the Advent season. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin on this Thursday afternoon, the 12th of December. Terry Mattingly is our guest as we discuss media coverage of an LGBTQ controversy at a Quaker university, although from the media coverage, you wouldn't tell that there was a controversy at all. Terry is senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, refamiliarize us with the TMAT trio, and does it have anything to do with our discussion of media coverage of this particular George Fox University incident?
Well, the TMAT trio, for our critics, long ago, really early in the history of the blog, and the blog is 17 years old now, was the subject of a drinking game. Now, do Lutherans ever have drinking games, or does that depend on
some people would argue that Lutheranism is a drinking game, but yes, we do have them.
Well, I'm sure there are doctrinal points that are made enough that there could be a drinking game. But anyway, the TMAT trio was the subject of a drinking game. You could probably have one with Kellerism as well, but anyway. And the TMAT trio were the three questions that when I was active in Denver as a reporter covering controversies, I discovered that if you ask these three questions, you can probe the key issues in disputes these days inside of Christian denominations. And the key is not so much how people answer. You learn a lot when they decline to answer, or they refuse to answer, or they try to bend the question in some way. And the TMAT trio, the first one is, did the resurrection actually happen as an event in real time? Pretty straightforward doctrine. Question number two is salvation through Jesus Christ alone? This is essentially a question about universalism. And question number three, like it or not in our age, is sex outside of marriage a sin? And the key word, I once had a discussion of this question with George Gallup, the late George Gallup now, of the Gallup organization. He liked this wording because it's not a political question. It's a doctrinal question. Is sex outside of marriage, gay, straight, whatever, sin? Not illegal, not the worst of sins, just is it sin? And I would argue that the George Fox story is another visit to the TMAT trio. in that essentially what we're trying to do here is renegotiate centuries of Christian doctrine about not only the definition of marriage, but also, and you could imagine how important this is at a college, what happens before marriage? What happens to sexuality and specifically sexual intercourse before marriage? Is sex outside of marriage a sin? Now, personally, as someone who's been a teacher on two Christian liberal arts campuses, in this highly charged up, politicized age, a lot of conversation has gone on about sexuality involving gay and lesbian students. It got to the point at one school where I was that, I mean, I figured if two gay students even looked at each other, they'd be in massive trouble with the school. But then you could walk in the lobby, you know, of a dorm on the campus, and students would basically be doing everything short of conceiving children, you know, right there in the lobby in terms of premarital sexual activity. Let's just put it that way. Lots of foreplay, for lack of a better word. Anyway, this thing at George Fox is distinctly about how do you treat gay and lesbian and trans students in one case, how do you treat them fairly once they've signed the documents to join your school? Do you ask them to leave? Do you argue that these are people who need counseling of some kind if they wish, as many of them would be adults? But you can see the point. Is sex outside of marriage a sin is really a dividing point in terms of what these schools can advocate or not advocate doctrinally. It's going to get you in trouble whichever way you go on that.
I'm curious about this. This story has now obviously moved beyond the AP and RNS circle. Out Magazine picked it up and kind of took the victory lap that one would expect from that outlet. But I'm wondering about the other outlets that have picked it up as well. They're kind of just drawing from the wire, so to speak, not doing a lot of extra journalism. That's probably budgetary, as you say. But I'm wondering whether or not the way it's being covered is to make it sound like, although controversy seems it would be get more eyes on the page, I'm wondering whether or not it's just a way of saying there's nothing to see here. Move along, because why not cover it as a controversy? Why not get opposing voices? Why not talk to one of those campus ministers who says this should never have happened here?
Well, it is controversial, and they're saying it's bad that it's controversial because basically Religion News Service and AP in this story is saying there's good Christian doctrine and there's bad Christian doctrine, and we get to tell you which is which. And that's really amazing if you stop and think about it. I mean, trying to go to Orthodox Jews or Muslims or anyone else and say to Muslims, okay, there's good Muslim doctrine and there's bad Muslim doctrine. Let us tell you what you need to believe in order to be good Christians, essentially, is what this story is saying. Because the liberal Christians are presented as Christians, as they should be, and they're the courageous people who are trying to correct centuries of error. And that's a perspective that presumes that you already know that they're right. Aside from that bias, there's no problem here, right? I mean, if there is only one side to this story, and there are newsrooms, BuzzFeed, for example, has openly stated, we believe there are issues on which there are no longer two sides. Abortion is one of them, and the other is gay rights. A lot of other papers, like the New York Times, have never openly stated these things. I make a big deal out of the Bill Keller quote, for the simple reason that this is a very candid and frank moment, and I think he's speaking the truth about his newsroom, at least lots of people in his newsroom. Even at the New York Times or CNN or whatever, you can find quality journalism that's still being produced on some issues and some issues related to social and moral and cultural issues. But most of the time, this is what you're going to get. a New York Times readers representative, an ombud person, years ago, this is like 15 years ago, I think, wrote an article about the liberal views of the New York Times. And he at one point said the paper's reporting on gay rights issues approaches cheerleading. And I think that's what we're dealing with here. We have journalists who are cheerleading for one side instead of trying to give readers an accurate and respectful sample of what the views sound like on both sides.
I'm going to be cynical for a moment here, and I'm trying to think of the chancellor or the president of George Fox University sees this. He's thinking, oh, I have some very conservative donors who will not be happy to see this flying around in social media. I need to do two things. I need to explain it to them. Why did this happen at George Fox? And then I need to get that out to the media. And he's going to pick up the phone and call whoever wrote this story for RNS. Is it possible that they just didn't print what he inevitably might have wanted to say?
Well, I think at this point, he didn't call them. And I think the campus officials may have been tempted to think that the story would just go away. The problem with that is that it's a valid story. It's a valid story, and it's an important story in terms of what the college either stands for or does not stand for. So valid, important stories don't just vanish. I would argue that a lot more conservatives need to call the press back up and make a point of view. And by the way, if you're going to be interviewed, I always stress now that it's fair game for people on both sides of the interview to tape what's said. Imagine if the president of this school did call up the Associated Press and talk to the author of this story, in this case at RNS instead. And in the, you know, at the end of the interview, if no comments end up or only one sentence ends up, the president at that point would be free to publish a transcript of the interview on his college's website. I think this is a sort of dialogue with the press that needs to occur more often. It would lead to maybe less candor, but maybe more honesty. But part of the problem we're dealing with here, the other half of this blind spot in the American press, is that I think way too many religious leaders have given up on talking to the press and trying to explain their beliefs in ways that would have a chance to connect with people and at least make a case for what they believe.
Terry, what does all of this have to do with the future of your organization, Get Religion?
Well, I think the question, I mean, going back to where we started, this deja vu all over again, we keep talking about some of these things over and over and over. And I know for a lot of people that gets old. Some people would simply say that the age of criticizing the press or dialoguing with the press is over. You either just put up or shut up and move on. Get Religion's in a transition right now. We're moving, effective January 1, we're moving south, to be quite honest with you. Get Religion is now going to be based at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. And that may sound like a strange connection unless you know something about Charles Overby, the man who leads the center and the person who's responsible for it being there attached to the journalism school at Ole Miss. Charles Overby, for 2+ decades, was head of the Freedom Forum, which is one of the nation's leading think tanks on the defense of both halves of the First Amendment, both press freedoms and religious liberty. He's someone I have known for quite a few decades because he's read my column for a long time, and the column is 31 years old. And through my contacts with him, that's how we ended up at Ole Miss. Now, the flip side of this is we're going to be attached to a nonprofit organization that's very active on First Amendment issues, but we're also entering a stage after the end of a very long grant that we were very thankful that it was there, and now it's gone. We are now needing to raise some money to help continue the work of Get Religion and these podcasts and all the other things we do. In fact, at Ole Miss, we're going to be expanding what we do in the sense that we'll be presenting or taking part in at least one forum per semester on issues of religion, politics, and journalism. Stuff that will be directly related to Get Religion, and then that material will end up online. In the context of a major state university and a major think tank on the First Amendment. So I think that that's a positive step. It certainly points out again that the First Amendment is what this is all about. Over and over and over, the press is free and we have religious liberty in remarkable language in the First Amendment. Get Religion has always been interested in both, and thus we've spent so much of our time trying to stress traditional journalistic values in coverage of religious liberty, which is exactly what we're talking about today. We're defending the old school journalism values of accuracy, balance, and fairness, and showing respect for people on both sides. And now we need listeners and other people to help us carry that on. This is new for me. I've never had to do this kind of work before. And I'm glad we have this chance to move forward in this way.
Folks, if you're concerned like we are with media coverage of religion, please make a year-end tax-deductible donation to Get Religion at getreligion.org. Getreligion.org. Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks.
Glad to be here again.
When we come back from this break, Glenn Stanton joins us. There have been two columns in The Atlantic recently warning about gender reveal parties. You know these parties that you see on YouTube where the mom and the dad with the baby on the way cut the cake, and if it's pink, they discover it's a girl. If it's blue, it's a boy. Well, The Atlantic is not so happy about reveal parties. We'll find out why after this. If you're looking for a Christmas gift for a child, grandchild, or godchild ages 2 through 7, purchase the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December, Angel, Angel, What Do You See? Follow Mary and Joseph, the donkey, the innkeeper, and the shepherds to discover that this special baby is the Savior, born for you and me. Learn more about Angel, Angel, What Do You See? By calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or at issuesetc.org. Angel, Angel, What Do You See?
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Pedal Pushers is the Lutheran Federal Credit Union Ministry of the Month for December. Pedal Pushers decorates the Lutheran Hour Ministries float for the Tournament of Roses Parade. When you use your Lutheran FCU debit or credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, they'll give you cash back and give that same amount of money to Pedal Pushers. Learn more at lutheranfcu.org. Good for you, good for the church. Lutheran Federal Credit Union, lutheranfcu.org.
Looking for a faithful Lutheran church in East Central Oklahoma? Welcome to Trinity Okmulgee, a friendly and faithful LCMS congregation only 40 miles south of Tulsa. Hi, this is Pastor Chris Teebs. Check us out at trinityokmulgee.org. That's Trinity OKMULGEE, all one word, .org. See you soon at Trinity Okmulgee, Oklahoma.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Not only does our church need men right now, but the world needs men who will proclaim the gospel in its purity.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Peter Scare, Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
If when you go to sleep at night, you're thinking about it, my experience with it is this, is that thought won't go away. So if you're going to bed at night thinking about following our Lord and becoming a preacher of this gospel, then I would love if you could come and visit Fort Wayne, our campus. We'd love to show you around and show you what it is that we do.
Have you ever considered becoming a pastor? Contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or visit ctsfw.edu. Christ-centered, cross-focused, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.